Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Sports Cage Podcast is brought to you by the Canadian Brewhouse. Order your favorite CBH menu items from the comfort of your home with Skip the Dishes. Here's your host, Derek Taylor.
It's 4:30 on a Friday. We're here for Nelson Homes, supplying home packages and RTMs for over 65 years. And Zinger, I said it's a Friday, but you know what it actually is?
It's a Fajardo Friday.
Fajardo Fridays kicking off today. The Riders QB will join us at 5:05, 30 minutes with Cody Fajardo. We'll talk about everything. We'll talk about the man recently moved. We'll talk about the season. Hit me up with your questions for Cody. Yeah, anything. 306-936-6262. The text line, as always, for TrustedRegina.com, your source for local businesses you can trust. TrustedRegina.com is the smart and simple choice. Cody is also going to break down some plays with us. He's excited to kind of dig into last year's offense with us, which I am obviously very excited to do as well. Yeah, he'll tell us about, give us some inside scoops, take us inside the playbook. I think it'll be very exciting to kind of get in the mind. Whatever, we all have varying levels of knowledge about football. You may well know the game better than I do. I just get to watch it a bunch. Talking to a guy who does it for a living and has taken it serious for so many years, probably a decade, is going to, well, gosh, probably a decade, certainly a decade with Fajardo, is going to be potentially fascinating. So I'm excited to get into that.
It's going to be a good day. We've been having it circle on our calendar since we found out the news that he's going to be joining us every Friday. I know Cody tweeted about it earlier today. He's excited to come on with us, so it's going to be a good time coming up here at 5 p.m. DT. I'm looking forward to it.
All new intros. We've got some new music for We're ready.
We're ready.
We're ready for
something. We got our jerseys on. I mean, come on. It's game day.
Exactly. Luke Mullender will join us as we roll on between now and 6 o'clock. The big news of the day. Honestly, in this business, it is a Titanic boom. I was awakened by a text this morning.
Oh, man.
And I looked at my phone, and it was a buddy of mine. And I looked at my phone, and I thought, I'm still asleep. This isn't happening. This is clearly a dream. No way. Chris Cuthbert leaving TSN and going to Sportsnet. The number one play-by-play man for CFL football for more than a decade, leaving TSN, going to Sportsnet, where he'll do apparently a lot of hockey. Luke joins us now. Luke, when you saw that Cuthbert was leaving TSN, what did you think?
I thought of all the guys that I know that are sprinting to their computers and typing up their resume to replace them. That's what I thought of.
How is it going for you? Did you get the right formatting and stuff?
Literally guys sprinting to their computer. But yeah, you know what, that guy's a legend, man. he was fantastic for the Canadian Football League. It's gonna suck that he's going. I think that Dustin Nielsen will obviously pick up a lot more football when the Canadian Football League does start around. For Cuthbert, though, I think it's a really good move, obviously, because hey, you're getting older, and they've probably threw a boatload of money at you, and you get to do the NHL, which you know is going to come back in some way, shape, or form. So again, I thought it was I'm happy for Cuthbert. I'd love to share like a story or two that everybody else has shared, but I mean my conversations with CC were you know, in passing, and we're always pretty short. I remember what I always sort of, every time CC was doing the game, you know, we'd always sort of touch base beginning of the game and just sort of talk about what we thought. But I remember the best times to talk with him were always sort of at halftime, right? Where
yep.
because we'd be going and we'd see each other, and you'd literally have, because he had to be on air, and I'd be running to the bathroom or trying to beat Scruffy or someone else to the pizza line. And I would say, and it would be just enough time to give the major thought of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it would be like, hey, what do you think, man? Oh man, this defense is terrible, and blah, blah, blah. And then we'd go the separate way, you know? So we'd have just enough time to sort of mention what our thoughts were, but it was never a detailed conversation. I never sat down and had a beer with the man, but I know that from watching the reaction on Twitter and social media that, this was big. This was big for the sports world. In my mind, I look at this as John Gruden leaving Monday Night Football. That was devastating for me because I was like, oh no. And it's been even more devastating since Booger McFarland took a major role. But I know there's a lot of people that were shocked today. So again, Dustin Nielsen, huge opportunity for him. And I'm sure TSN's going to get flooded with a bunch of resumes. But you just have to look positive. It's one of those things. It was when Darian Durant left Ryderville, you know, I said, don't cry because you're angry, smile because it happened, you know, and we can smile because CC was really good for the Canadian Football League while he was here.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely was. The most interesting part of this for me, and I talked to folks at both Sportsnet and TSN today, no one saw it coming. I mean, contracts are one thing. They're, you know, guys are private about this and that in their own life. No one saw this coming, which is that people can keep a secret in 2020 is super impressive, for one. For two, I mean, he's been the voice. He's done every Grey Cup since 2008. He's done, by his count, 25 of them in total. He did the gold medal game at the 2010 Olympics for ice hockey. He did it in 2018 as well. This is the guy who, since the 90s, has been the voice of so many enormous moments in television sports, except for the Stanley Cup Finals. And just as a guy, and a guy who's had, you know, interactions with Cuthbert, he's been nothing but great to me. You hope he gets a chance to do that thing that he's never done. You root for, he doesn't need any help, but you root for the guy to get the chance to call, you know, the ultimate games in a sport that he loves. That would be, as a viewer, I would love to see that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, people still have that's the thing that's what makes the best in any industry. That's what makes them excel, because they come to work no matter what year they're in, whether it's year one or year 22, and they're excited about improving. Mm-hmm. They always try to get better. And you look at CC and you say, well, you know, there's a guy that, you know, still enjoyed and still chased something. And this is what this is one of the items that he was probably chasing in that Stanley Cup final, right? Like, everything to add to sort of, because again, when you're a kid growing up in wherever you're growing up, a lot of kids grow up wanting to hit the last home run in the bottom of the ninth with the bases loaded. They want to score the last goal in overtime of a gold medal of the game. They want to hit the final game winning shot, right? Like, they want to be the one throwing the Hail Mary pass in the fourth quarter. There are other people that want to be on the other side of history calling those games, right? And you revere those legends in different ways, right? Like, mm-hmm. The guy from LA when he retired, the radio broadcaster who I'm disrespecting, can't even think of, right? Vin Scully, right? Like, yeah, those guys dreamed of those moments. And you really get the feeling that CC is a guy that's always sort of wanted to be on that side of history and been the voice that carries those moments and creates those memories for so many other young kids.
Yeah. And honestly, it's said about a lot of folks, 100% true about Cuthbert, that he couldn't be a nicer guy. Like, for as busy as he always is, if you go around, if you took every play-by-play crew, Luke, you and I both, when we come to the game, we have like a board for the players, right? We have a board that has all the information we want, numbers and stuff like that. And everybody, gosh, if you went to every local radio broadcast for the CFL, and at least half of them, you would find Chris Cuthbert's template for those boards. He's been happy to share his knowledge and his materials with everybody. Everybody's got that file folder that Cuthbert started, where you can write in the names and you can write in the numbers and little facts. it's just one example of how much he's been willing to share with folks. For a guy who works so much, you wonder how he has time to do it. It's incredible.
Well, because I'll tell you why. It's because he gets it.
Yeah.
He gets it, right? He understands that if you want to be great, the one thing you also can't be is selfish. You have to be somebody that teaches the next generation. That's what goes into your greatness, right? Like, that's what we spent so much time watching, the Michael Jordan generation, and trying to, or the documentary, and trying to vilify the man. But in reality, he made guys better, right? CC made guys better.
Absolutely. Period. Yeah, absolutely. And even when there was no benefit to him directly, just for the sake of doing it. And I talk about a guy who's busy. Like, he would do football and hockey for TSN. He would then do hockey for NBC in the States. This is one story that I was able to see in person. It was after the 2018 Grey Cup, and we're leaving Edmonton, and guys have various flights out in the morning, and I managed to sneak along with some guys into the fancy Air Canada lounge. It's not that fancy, but for folks like me, I'm like, oh yeah, let's get some of that. And I sit with a bunch of guys, and Cuthbert was at the end of the table, and he had his tablet out, and you know, we're having assorted breakfast, and there's Cuthbert grinding away because he's got to call an NHL. He's flying to wherever it was, Boston, because he has to do an NHL game. And you go, man, it never stops. And honestly, just from the perspective of where I sit, a guy who's been in broadcasting for 20 years, he's still so good. You move from one sport to another, and you still maintain that greatness and that preparation and that ease of communicating with people listening. It's incredible to see it happen.
I think it was Joe Buck this year who did a World Series game and then came back and called a Monday Night Football game or a playoff game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are guys like that who are just special, who are just very good at their job and who have the capacity to do. And that's the thing. Like, that's another thing that separates guys is there's always, right? Fortunately for me, I have conversations with guys that have a lot more money than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I know about those guys and what makes them so successful is each one of them has a quirk, something that you would say is probably not actually normal, right? And I could literally list, I'm thinking of three guys right now who I consider mentors, who if they woke up with my money, they'd jump off the building. Like, but like, they have quirks. And I think that CC was like that. And then I think that's, you know, while everybody else is grabbing continental breakfast, he's grinding away, getting prepared for the next thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to love what you do to be like that, though. That doesn't come. You don't get that work ethic for a job you don't like. You get that work ethic when you're working your dream job. And that's what CC had.
Well, yeah. And you don't get to keep that job for as long as he has, if you don't keep grinding, right? Like you said, all the broadcasters that'll have their resumes and tapes in, every one of those guys wanted Cuthbert's job, right? You gotta earn your keep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, no doubt. If you're not willing to do the work, you might get a job, but you won't keep it.
Yeah.
Right. If you're complacent and you're average, hey, you're going to have that job for a little bit, but the guy who's willing to do the work, that's the thing. That's that Nick Saban quote, right? If you want to be great, like, it's not like a magic formula. It's not like you do this, you wake up and do this. Like, it takes what it takes. That's what Nick Saban says. It takes what it takes.
Yep.
So whatever CC was doing, that's what it took. If it was me, would I be in the Air Canada Center passing up a hot cinnamon bun? No, absolutely not. Nope, sure it wouldn't be. Especially to break down a roster, wrong guy.
Yeah.
Right? But CC was that guy.
Ah, absolutely was. And it's not like he's leaving, right? He's just moving from one company to another and leaving off a sport that you and I and Zinger all love. I mean, presumably, Sportsnet doesn't have CFL, so presumably we won't hear him doing CFL again anytime soon. But to be able to, you know, further chase his dream. I mean, he's only 62 years old, and you listen to him and go, man, that guy's got however much time he wants left. He wants to do this till he is Vin Scully's age. Bring it on, because that's Chris Cuthbert. And he's been, honestly, when you think of football commentators, CFL commentators, Luke, I can kind of hear Don Whitman in my mind, But honestly, most of my memories are Cuthbert and the way his voice might crack when the game gets super exciting. When I think of TV broadcasts, at my age, I think of Cuthbert.
Yeah, I Cuthbert, geez, who else? Madden.
Yeah.
I love, again, Gruden was always the sort of standard setter for me.
Yeah.
But that's on the play-by-play side. I really like, not a lot of people like Joe Buck. I really enjoy Joe Buck.
Agreed.
I like, the guy from CBS is one of my favorites too.
Jim Charles, Nance.
Not Jim Nance. Charles, man, he.
Color or play-by-play?
What? Play-by-play.
Jim Nance, Ian Eagle is number two there. Dude,
African-American dude, Charles something.
I feel like you're thinking of Charles Davis, who does color.
Yes, Charles, well, whatever. Whatever he does, Charles Davis has this innate ability to be excited at the right moment but keep everything else in perspective. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the Big Ten Championship one time when we beat Iowa, when Michigan State beat Iowa. And I remember distinctly his call on a last-second drive where Michigan State, we punched it through. It was Le'Veon Bell, and he like took on three guys, and he made it into the end zone. But I just remember that play being so much more hype because Charles Davis at the right time was at the top level. But he's got this great ability to know which level he needs to be at. And he's one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Yeah, it's in one way sad to see Cuthbert go, but in the other way, we're still going to see him. And, I mean, we're going to see him soon, right? And Sportsnet has NHL rights. NHL is coming back eventually. It'll be great to hear his voice again, and we will, of course, have plenty more. And, Zinger, if you have 59 there, you mentioned there's going to be guys putting in their tapes. I suspect one of those tapes will sound something like this.
With one kick, the Riders will win their sixth Labor Day Classic in a row, and thanks to the CFL's Canadian need to make everyone feel good, even a miss could tie the game and send us to overtime. Hang on, pause.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay, we're good. Lowther hits true. It's up, and it's good. The Riders win 19-17 and moved within one game of first place in the West. Rider Nation is unglued, and Lowther and Ryan are racing to Pill Country, home of Saskatchewan's tipsiest fans.
Drew Dalby, TSN, Toronto. How amazing would that be? Just take
Dalby it. Would be unbelievable at that.
He's already getting.
But
already
he'd have to. But Dalby, I feel like I'd have to be Dalby's agent at the contract signing, because what you'd want is Dalby to be able to say what he wants to say.
Oh yeah.
Like you wouldn't want like the hey, here's what you got to be like. Here's what you got to act like. You'd literally want Dalby sitting in there with some cheap tequila, you know, and a beer. Just going, because that it would be the greatest.
It's uncensored.
It would be the greatest call ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure, man.
You can watch the game with Rod Black on TSN 1. On TSN Blue, Dalby will take care of it.
Yeah. Fantastic. Basically.
Can you imagine how great broadcasting would be if they let guys curse? Ah,
like Bob Menery.
Oh, it would be. Yeah, exactly. It would be incredible. Dalby's. Wow. That was one of Dalby's DSPNs where he tries to steal my job. Now he'll try to go earn, I guess, Chris Cuthbert's job at the mighty TSN. Of course, Dalby and Brock doing afternoons on the Wolf for us. You can search up Dalby stuff at DSPNPXP. We're going to go to break on the other side. I want to get Luke's take on Drew Brees' controversy is now a couple days old. He's apologized. It's died down. Curious to get Luke's thoughts on the New Orleans Saints quarterback and so much more. If you've got questions, Cody Fajardo at 505. Hit me up on the text line or hit me up on Twitter at DT on SC. The text line 306-936-6262. One big number for this day is 25. Iconic play-by-play man Chris Cuthbert has called 25 Grey Cups in his career, and every single one since 2008 for TSN. He shook up the sports media world today, announcing his move from TSN to Sportsnet, where he can focus on hockey. Hurts to think Cuthbert might never call another CFL game, but like Luke said, we're glad to have him while he did. One big number for Linex spray on truck bed liners, serious protection, killer looks. Visit Linex at 1865 McCara Street or Google Regina Linex.
Sports ticker time, 4:52 in the sports cage. And yes, shocking news from the TV today. Chris Cuthbert is leaving TSN to go to their rivals at Sportsnet. Cuthbert says he's excited to return to Hockey Night in Canada. And thanks to you, the Rough Rider Foundation is donating $30,000 to charities in Saskatoon. The money is from the purchase of masks the team has been selling. $15,000 each to food programs in Regina and in Saskatoon, DT.
Very good stuff there. Should mention, Chris Cuthbert will join us Monday on the Sports Cage. Excited to talk to CC about a big move for him. We have about 5 minutes. Luke, how much do you want to talk about Drew Brees, the resulting fallout, calls for him to retire, him apologizing? What's your, now that we've had a couple days to watch it happen, where are you on Drew Brees and what happened there?
Drew Brees is like millions of other Americans who aren't racist but have absolutely no clue what people of color are subjected to in the United States of America. That's where that statement came from. It came from an idea, or it came from a person that has absolutely zero knowledge, who is absolutely tone deaf to the things that people of color have to go through in the States and in Canada. That's what I think of Drew Brees. He's absolutely not a racist. He is just very stupid, and he is tone deaf to the demographic that he was talking about. And I thought the best out of all the backlash, all the Malcolm Jenkins, all the stuff that came out immediately after him, the best statement was from Michael Thomas. He don't know any better, because he doesn't. You can't sit from a place where it's funny, right? Like, you don't. Privilege is having to look up racism instead of experiencing it. That's what privilege is.
That's really good. That's a really good
thing. Drew Brees has zero clue what his teammates who are black may have to go. Drew Brees has no clue that his black teammates can't approach a cop car on the side of the road at night, and he can. And he doesn't understand that the feelings of the cop, if they did it to the same cop, are totally different. Drew Brees has zero clue of that. And there are a lot of Americans and a lot of Canadians who are the same way. I am admitting on air that when I first heard of indigenous, of residential schools, I thought it was a good idea. You know why? Because I thought it was like my privilege, but in Michigan State, where I was getting a free education. Mm-hmm. Residential schools couldn't have been worse. They were the worst thing to happen they were one of the worst things to happen to the indigenous communities, period. And there are generations of families that have been impacted so negatively by residential school. And when I first heard about them and got a very snapshot view, I thought it might be a good idea because the school was free. That's how stupid I was. That's how much knowledge I actually had, and that's how little, and that's how tone deaf I was to just one of the plights of the indigenous communities in Canada.
Yeah,
and that's Drew Brees in America.
And it's incumbent on all of us to learn more and to put yourself in their shoes. It's a tired phrase, but just see the world from someone else's perspective. Daryl on the text line calls for Drew Brees to retire. How utterly absurd. No one did more for New Orleans during Katrina, now donating $5 million to COVID relief. Canceling might be a little much. You hope that he gets the lesson, though. It has been 4 years since Colin Kaepernick kneeled. Did he really all of a sudden get it overnight? We will discuss this more as we go along. We have to go to break now. Don't forget, Cody Fajardo, the Riders quarterback. It is a Fajardo Friday, 5:05. Stick with us. News is next on the Sports Cage. I guarantee you Cody Fajardo was singing along with that song. Confirmed or not confirmed, Cody?
Confirmed. Is it game day? Gosh, what an intro you guys had there. Holy cow.
I thought about what music will we use to bring in Cody, and I thought, well, let's start with his song, and then we'll go from there. That, for folks who don't know, that song, tell us what it is and what importance it holds for you.
Yeah, for me, it's been my song since my sophomore year, really my first start in college football. I couldn't listen to punk rock or anything that kind of got me slamming my head into my locker before games. And when I stumbled upon this song, what really helps me on game day, because I get so nervous for games, is what the song's all about is just looking into your house and putting a lot of things in perspective about your family. And that's the reason I played this game, for my family and for my loved ones. And it helps me calm down. So that's why that song's been so close to me. And I listen to it before every game on repeat, really. Sometimes we'll have a long delay or a long time before we go out to kickoff, and I'll listen to it like 4 or 5 times straight.
2-hour rain delay against Toronto, front porch looking in by Lone Star on repeat. I like it.
No doubt.
That's fantastic. Yes, this is the first Fajardo Friday. Cody joins us for a half hour of, we're going to talk about a little bit of anything and everything. And then in the second segment, Cody, this was something you really wanted to do. You're going to break down some plays with us.
No doubt. Yeah, I think it'll be a great job to give fans kind of inside look at my mind and what I'm looking at and what I'm seeing. And so I think that'll be something that fans will need right now, is just, we all want football back, and maybe it's a little glimpse into my brain and how I see things on the field.
Well, that is going to be excellent. We have a special topic for that coming up in a few minutes from now. You moved recently. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so my wife's schooling is done in Washington, D.C., and so now she's going to the practical phase of her schooling, and so we recently are in escrow for a house here in Reno, Nevada, where we both went to school and met each other. We drove across country in a pandemic, which honestly, when you were driving, you kind of forgot how crazy things were until you had to stop for gas and you see people with masks and gloves and stuff, or you see restaurants closed. But when we were on the open road, it was just me, her, and the dog, and we were just having great conversations like everything was normal.
Man, so what is it? Yeah, what is it like? Like, have you dealt with movers who are wearing masks and don't want you anywhere near them? Strangers in your house? What's that been like?
Yeah, I think the hardest thing was house shopping. We had to sign affidavits about, you know, we don't have fevers or any COVID symptoms. And so a lot of the owners wanted us to sign these documents to make sure, because we're going to their house. And it wasn't like you can have an open house and have a bunch of people go and look. So it was tough for us because we had to set a specific time and you're only allotted a certain amount of time to look through the house. And you want to make sure it's a huge purchase. So you want to make sure you cover a lot of the bases before you put in an offer.
Yeah.
And so that was just one of the interesting things. And I think the other thing was the inventory was so low, but the buyers, like the house we finally got our offer accepted on, it was on the market for one day. And it had 6 offers. And of the 6 offers, 5 of them, including ours, was over asking price.
Wow.
Which kind of tells you how competitive the market has been.
Give me the thing. I bought a house with my wife a year ago, and there were certain things that we had to have. Give me the thing that you or your wife absolutely had to have, and this house has it.
Yeah. So our biggest thing was a big backyard. We got a dog, Sully, everyone knows. We got a golden doodle, and we've been living in a one-bedroom apartment in D.C. for 2 years now. So he deserves some land. He deserves to free roam. And so we got a house with about 0.38 of an acreage, which is pretty big for city living. So that was number one. And then number two was we wanted an open floor plan with a nice kitchen, because you spend most of your time in a kitchen, right?
Yeah.
So we wanted that to be one of the nicest parts of the house. And fortunately, we found both those in this house, which is truly incredible.
Yeah, you're every home buyer on HGTV right there. Oh, we want an open floor plan. We'd like a big yard. We would like three or four bedrooms like that. The open floor plan.
That's a cookie cutter. Yeah. That's a cookie cutter answer. I'm sorry.
No, it makes all the difference when you walk into a house that was built in the 70s and everything is like another box next to you. You're like, Why are all these walls here? What did we learn in the,
no doubt,
the 2000s, right? Cody, Luke Mullender is alongside us as well. Luke, you got anything for Cody?
Well, first of all, congratulations. And listen, man, if your wife is on the practical side of her education now, I'll tell you what, you're going to have to get used to that kitchen, brother, because those are long nights, long shifts, and she's gonna need a good meal when you get home, man, or when she gets home. So be ready.
Well, that's exactly the point. My thing was, all right, I'll play football long enough to get her through school, and then I can retire, be a stay-at-home dad, and cook all the meals, and I'm good with that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good game plan, man. See, you're a lot farther ahead than a lot of the guys I know, man. Good job.
Well, that's good to hear. That's definitely good to hear.
That is outstanding. He is the Riders quarterback, Cody Fajardo. It is a Fajardo Friday on the Sports Cage. And, Cody, you left Washington, D.C., and I can't help but think that you left Washington, D.C. at just about the right time. That city and that district is in turmoil right now.
I think, yeah. I mean, all across the U.S. I don't think it's strictly there, because even here in Reno we had protests, which I firmly stand behind, and I think there needs to be an immediate change. It's gone on long enough. My biggest take on the subject is, as a Christian, nobody should live in fear, no matter what your background is, ethnicity, your religion, no matter what that is. If you live your constant life in fear of what's going to happen today, that's not fair to anybody, because life's too short. And so I totally agree with these protests, and I think there needs to be an immediate change here in the U.S. Because it's long overdue, and that's for sure.
I'm curious, as a religious guy, when I watch this as not a religious guy, I see the Bible and I see it kind of weaponized sometimes in both directions. And well, okay, in the let's get rid of people or use it to as a reason to justify hate, be it for whatever reason. And I don't feel, what's your impression of that? I'll leave it there. But what's your impression of that as a man who is religious and the Bible being used as kind of a weapon for hate?
No, I agree with you. I think the problem sometimes is people use the Bible as a crutch, and when their argument isn't firm or they don't have a lot of research on the topic, they just throw out religion, because then people are kind of weary or don't really want to talk about religion, or some people aren't as educated in religion, so it kind of just stops the conversation. And so I think you see that sometimes, where even people who might not be the most religious people will be the first ones to talk about religion, because it ends the conversation right there. And so for me, as a religious man, I want to be able to educate people as much as possible. And we're called as Christians to love everybody, no matter what their background is, no matter what their religion is. We love everyone as Christ does. And so that's how I live my everyday life.
Yeah, and then you were James Wilder. I don't know who put the video together, but James Wilder was the first one on it, and it was, there were a lot of CFL stars on that saying, "I stand against systemic racism," and that, and to see your face in that, I thought, oh, that's really nice. That's you. I mean, you know that in the last year you've acquired a pretty big platform, and to see you using it for good, I was, as a fan, to me, very heartwarming.
No doubt. I got to, tip my hat to James Wilder. He is an advocate. He is all over this, doing everything he can with his platform. He reached out to me, and obviously we were teammates, won a championship together, so we're brothers, bonded for life, and it was just something I wanted to do to help him and be able to reach as many people as possible, because I have a great platform like you talked about. And so for me, if I had looked back on it and I didn't do anything with my platform, I would be disgusted in myself, and that's why I wanted to make a stance and let them know that I was with them and with all my CFL brothers, because I think what's the greatest thing about sports, especially football, is you have a collection of 60-plus guys that come from different backgrounds, different personalities, different wealth, and you get in this locker room, and you're all fighting for this one common thing, and it's to win a championship. And it kind of bonds you. And even though you might have different political views or you might have different views on life, those are always put to the side, and your friendship and relationships grow as the season progresses, because you go through so much adversity. And so I think that's one of the greatest things. And something I miss right now is I miss the locker room. And I know when I'm done playing football, I'm going to miss the locker room, because coming in after practice and just talking about life, doesn't have to be football, is what is one of my favorite things to do on a day-to-day basis.
I love it. I love it. We're going to go to break in a second. We'll go there with this one question. Cody, if I said to you your most thoughtful Riders teammates, who comes to mind? You don't have to rank them or anything, but as far as guys who were thoughtful and maybe profound, who comes to mind?
It would have to be Manny Arsenault. He, his locker was right next to mine. Naaman was actually right next to me, and then Manny was just off to the side. You know Naaman. Naaman's a little bit more quiet, but when he talks up, people listen. Manny is just so educated about everything, and he's not afraid to voice his opinion on anything. And I think a lot of guys, you notice in locker room who those guys are, because the conversation gravitates towards that person's locker. So I would always find a bunch of players around my locker, and they're all gravitating to listen to Manny talk, listen to Naaman talk, listen to Shaq talk, like guys in that corner. And you can tell they definitely have a voice, and people love listening to them.
I love it. I love it. Cody Fajardo taking us inside the Riders locker room. He'll take us inside the playbook next. We're going to talk about one of my favorite parts of CFL football, the two-point convert. I love it. I think teams should do it all the time. We'll get Cody's take on it, and he'll take us inside a couple of their plays from the 2019 season. It is Fajardo Friday on the Sports Cage for Nelson Holmes. We're back in a moment. .523 on the Sports Cage. Yes, it is the first Fajardo Friday. The Riders quarterback Cody Fajardo on the line with us. Derek Taylor, Luke Mullender as well. Luke, if you could concisely wrap up how I feel about two-point converts, what would you say?
It borders along the lines of probably needing a legal document to stop you from talking about how effective they are. literally a restraining order.
Yes, like, absolutely. So, Cody,
you talk about this entirely too much.
Too much, but I'm on the always train. Always go for two. Cody, what do you think about going for one, going for two?
I definitely think there's a time and a place. I've listened to your stance on it, and using your words, not mine, you said fetish. So I do listen to it because I know you've done the research. You're a stats guy, and I love learning about statistical analysis added onto football. Mm-hmm. But what I would say about this is I think after your first touchdown, if you're the first team to score, we talked about a little bit about this. It was just in the passing in a hallway. But if you score your first touchdown, you go for two, you get it, and then you have a kicker that can kick the ball on the kickoff into the end zone and you can get a point, you are up 9-0 before the other team even has a chance to touch the ball. And as a quarterback, when you jog on the field and you look at the scoreboard and you know you're already down two possessions before you touch the ball, psychologically, that plays a big, big part in it. So I definitely think if you're the first one to score, you should go for two without a doubt.
Yeah, and that's something that Rick Campbell really, really did in Ottawa, and Hamilton took it to another level this past season. They would go for two always. Even if you don't get that one-point kickoff, a lot of teams are not comfortable going for two. Like Winnipeg, I think, might have gone only in situations where they had to this past season. So even down 8 points, they start to feel they're down two scores. Basically, the numbers say you get 2 points since it ever started in the CFL in 2015 with the new rules, 60% of the time. So you average 1.2 points. If you kick, you average 0.9 points. To me, that's just gravy that I want to sop up with a biscuit. So we should go for it. And this is for you, Cody. I think back to Calgary in 2015-2016 when Marque McDaniel was that third receiver to the field, that R receiver. And I looked at them and they would run him, 2 yards deep, in, out, whatever. Just put the Sam or whoever on an island. And that play seemed unstoppable. I feel like if you and Coach Moss sat down for 2 hours and said, how can we score from the 3-yard line every time? I feel like you guys could really do some damage.
I think that's a great point. And what I think a lot of fans don't realize is three conversions is another part of practice that you have to rep, and you have to have certain plays from the 3 yard line because it's such a weird yard line where in a game, you don't end up finding yourself on that yard line unless you're going for two very often. So going into a game, usually most teams carry one, maybe two-point conversions if they have to, if they have to go for two once. But I think Ottawa, they were practicing about four or five a game and knowing that they had four or five two-point plays in their pocket. And so a lot of teams run into the issue, well, we only have one or two-point conversions. Let's not use it early. Let's use it only if we have to, if that makes sense. So for us, I was looking kind of at the numbers, and we didn't seem too successful on the two-point conversion last year on the pass. And my big stance on the two-point, I guess the other way, I kind of said for it in the beginning, but my against it is you never want to give a team a convert win because that would just hurt too much rather than just pushing it to overtime, right? Say you go for two and you're not forced to go for two, and now all of a sudden they score last and all they have to do is kick a convert to win the game. That's a brutal way to lose a game.
Yeah, it absolutely would be, and we can dive more into the philosophy of it, but I wanted to get to some of the plays. We went back and pulled out the four times that you guys went for it with a passing play as opposed to having William Powell put it in or you diving for the corner. This was late in the game against Ottawa. You guys scored a touchdown to get within five, made it 44-39. And this was you guys going for two with 26 seconds left. We'll play how it sounded on the radio between Luke and I, and then if you can give us a little more about what was happening here. Go ahead, Zing.
Great.
Cannon, Moore, and Albert Awachi to the field. Shaq and Naaman Roosevelt, wide receiver and slot to the boundary side. Looking to that boundary side. Roosevelt got tied up. It's Shaq on the corner route. He leaps in. He's got it for the two-point convert. So, yes, 26 seconds remaining. 44-41, the Riders are within a field goal.
There's me in my second game kind of stepping on my words, but Naaman gets a little tied up and Shaq gets open. What was happening for you on that play? What did you see from pre-snap to getting Shaq the ball?
Yep, so the play we called was, it's spread right, 70 Ruby Reed. So the 70 number tells us that there's seven-man protection. So we're going to have seven guys protecting, which leaves us with five guys, you know, being able to run a route. Four guys, really, because you count me. So for us, anytime you're in a two-point conversion situation, you always expect man coverage or you all expect all-out blitz, some sort of pressure. In that instance, you hit it right on the head. That play is designed, this Ruby replay is designed to have Naaman get a nice rub from Shaq, a rub route. We don't call them picks on offense, we call them rubs. Defensive guys call them picks. But a nice rub, so Naaman comes right behind Shaq and catches the ball. Unfortunately, Naaman got hung up, so the second part of the read is Shaq, after the rub, he starts running towards the back pylon. And part of our read is if Naaman's not there, then we just throw a jump ball to Shaq and hope for the best. And as you see, you know, I underthrew the ball, Shaq elevates, makes a play, and brings us within one possession. And we converted our first convert of the year, I believe.
Yeah, that was your first. So 70 Ruby Reed was how you guys called it last time out, or last season. Okay.
Exactly. And it's just a mirrored route, so we had the same route on both sides. Typically, as a quarterback, you want to work the boundary because it's a little bit closer throw. Also, knowing that I had Shaq and Naaman to the boundary, we had Katie Cannon and Swerve to the field. And those guys are a little bit younger at the time, and so this is more of a veteran route. So in my mind, I was just thinking, I'm going to go with the veteran side. They've ran it a lot more, and in the boundary, it makes it a lot easier to throw.
At that point, that was week two, and coming off of, we'd seen Shaq, you know, in the 2018 season. I almost didn't know as a fan what to expect from Shaq versus now. I think he's easily top five receiver in the CFL. What did you know about Shaq in that moment, in that game?
I knew that wherever I put the ball, Shaq can elevate and make a play. And I also knew that I could not overthrow Shaq Evans. It didn't matter how hard I threw that football. He would always run underneath it. And there was times in practice where I would throw it as far as I can and Shaq would beat the DB by 5 yards and have to slow up. And he's like, come on, Cody. I'm like, Shaq, you're just outrunning my arm. I only have so much God-given talent. So with him, I had to learn I had to throw it up a lot earlier than other guys because he can just blaze.
Yeah, Shaq is phenomenal. Luke, from your perspective, you were a defensive player. 3 yards of field and 20 yards of end zone. Does that change much from a defensive perspective?
Well, Cody touched on it a bit. I think that the more, again, you have to always remember, I always remind Rider Nation that in the Canadian Football League, you're only together 4.5 hours a day. And you're only on a field for a percentage of that 4.5 hours. And the more you have to prepare for in the film room and the more you have to go through and practice, for instance, your day three special sort of situation plays, the harder it is to prepare for a team, right? So if a team comes in and like Cody alluded to, you have 3 or 4 or 5 plays that you run, you've got to literally run defenses against all of those in practice, and that takes time, right? So logistically and administratively, you're spending an awful lot of time on something that in the big picture, if a team goes for 2 in the first quarter or the first drive, it's not that big a deal yet. So again, am I all 4 teams going for 2-point conversions? Yeah, I think so, and I think Cody's right. I remember looking, DT, when you sent me that text about the teams that you or the plays that you were looking at, like every one of the looks is a man look, right? And I do remember sort of going through those plays quickly and in my mind remembering, like, for instance, the double read that Cody's talking about now is he had fantastic protection. And it starts up front, and on these 3-point plays, you're going to have protection, if anything, because your quarterback's got to get the ball out. And I remember, especially in that Ottawa game, is that was great protection and Shaq's ability to adjust to the ball. Because I remember when he ran in, it's not that he ran a little bit too far, but the way they rubbed the route took him into a space that he might not have wanted to be in, right? It pushed him farther towards the goalpost than he may have wanted, and he had to really adjust. And again, you guys alluded to it, but it was a fantastic job adjusting to the ball. And kudos to Cody because A, the protection was good. He was patient, and he put it to where a spot that nobody's going to get it but Shaq. And that's the other thing about it. You don't want that momentum going the other way, right? Them intercepting the ball, running back 90, 110 yards for 2 points, right? It was just everything really worked out there. And as a matter of fact, yeah, again, the 4 plays you guys are going over here, all of them were man defense, right? And it really goes to show that teams look a certain way. And I don't know any one defensive coordinator that's going to play zone in that situation because a guy like Cody's just going to call the play, have a receiver turn around on the goal line, throw it to him, and then just fall into it, right? So you're going to see man.
Yeah. Let me ask you about that, Cody. We won't dive too far into the other 3 plays, but one of the other ones was week 6 against BC. You ended up throwing an interception. I think Devon Coleman brought it down. From a statistical perspective, that doesn't really count as a turnover, right? Because they can't take that and now get the ball on offense. It's just a convert play. Does that make you more likely to try to force a ball in or take a risk? Or is it the same as a normal offensive play?
Well, I want to thank you for the platform. I've made myself very clear on this topic that this is the worst rule in the CFL game for all quarterbacks. And just for the fact of the game, is in 2-point converts, it's technically a dead play, even though they can bring the ball back. So if I do force the ball and throw a pick, I shouldn't be penalized for that like every other football league in across the world. Mm-hmm. But in the CFL, you get penalized. So in the BC game, fortunately, it was a tip ball, and they picked it, and it goes down as an interception on your stats. Even though as a quarterback, it, like at the time, you don't think about it. When you look at the stats after the game and you see how you move the ball and you didn't want any turnovers, obviously, and then you're like, well, I had an interception. When was that? And they're like, 2-point conversion. So for me, it's hard because it's that constant battle between throwing a pick and mentally being a little bit messed up or giving your guy a chance and going for the 2-point. For me, I'm always going for the win. I could care less about the stats, but it does play a factor for sure if you throw an interception on 2-point conversion because it counts for an interception. But as far as the play goes for BC, so the play call that we had was X, which is a motion, slide 51 Haas, X Pittsburgh, Y Tahoe. Basically what we were running here was out of the 51 Haas, we were free releasing our back to the boundary, and bringing in that R receiver to protect. This is a way for us to kind of mismatch, get our running back on a linebacker because we were expecting man or some sort of pressure, but also have that protection aspect where we're not in an empty look. So right here, BC did a great job. What they did was they peeled the defensive end with our running back, and not many teams do that because it's hard to have a defensive end run with a running back, but when you're so close to the end zone, it makes sense. So when they peeled him, that's our first read. Then we have a mesh between our W at the time and our Y to the field. They got hung up in the middle, and pretty much I had to try and buy some time to let that work out, and had a guy on me, tried to force a ball, tip, pick, and there you have it, my one rant about the CFL rules that I am completely against.
Just saying that in those of us who keep our own stats on the side, does not count as an interception. That does not go down as a pick. Because for exactly the reasons you said, it's not a real play. And you probably should try to force a couple in there because the penalty is infinitely less than what it is. I love it. Hit me with that play call once again because it went on for like an hour.
Okay, so it was X slide to spread right wax, 51 Haas, X Pittsburgh, Y Tahoe.
Oh my gosh! So each guy gets his own designation. That's, I don't know how y'all do it.
That's the tough thing, and I think fans don't realize this, but because we have a 20-second play clock, I am so thankful that we have wristbands because these are the play calls that we have.
Yeah.
In the NFL, they have a 40-second play clock, so everything comes in your speakers. And I don't think fans also realize this, that the speakers in your helmet are like right behind your ear, and some of these coaches will yell because they want to get the play out fast, and it just sounds like a bunch of mumble jumble, and you're like, I have no idea what coach just called. And there's times when in my headset, we're just calling numbers, and then I look on my wristband, and I'm like, did he say 47, 37, 57? Because we have about 100 plays on our wristband from game to game. And I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, I look at all three of them. Whichever one I feel most comfortable with, that's the one I call.
Yeah, exactly. I hope I don't get yelled at. I hope this is the one he thought it was going to be. That's awesome. Cody, thank you so much, man. This was a great first Fajardo Friday. I'm really looking forward to this. It's really, it's neat to get a chance to dig into what's actually going on and all the stuff that you have to deal with. And then, oh, by the way, 7 guys in orange jerseys are trying to kill you while this is all happening. It's incredible from a fan's perspective to hear what's actually has to go on in your mind. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So thank you guys. I think this segment is going to be awesome. And I look forward to the more situations you put me in because also it helps me and it helps me study some tape. It helps me look back on last year's season and kind of correct some of my mistakes. And so, I think it's going to be good not only for the fans and everyone wants to hear that, but it's going to be good for me and my development as a quarterback. So I appreciate you guys.
Go for two, always, 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 always. Just going for two. No. Thanks, Cody. All the best.
Yeah, DT, thank you. Luke, thank you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Take care, boss.
Look forward to next week for Fajardo Fridays.
Love it. It is Cody Fajardo, the Riders quarterback. Good enough to join us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Use the Western Pizza app or go to westernpizzaexpress.ca for fully contactless delivery because Western Pizza cares. If you want to dive a little further into what Cody said, you can always get the Sports Cage on demand for the Canadian Brewhouse. It is going to be great because Cody is a good dude and willing to share information on what the Riders were doing in 2019. 5:40, we're going to break. Luke and I are back with more next. .544 on the Cage, the smoke and play of the day every day, brought to you by JB's Sausage Maker. Make your healthy choices with JB's Sausage Maker Supplies, now accepting orders online. Make flavors bland to bold. Terrific stuff from Cody Fajardo on the first Fajardo Friday. And Luke, as a guy who was a terrible high school football player at a terrible high school, whose highlight was a block I once threw, it always fascinates me the amount of things that you as a pro football player had to know when it always for a long time looked to me like, well, Luke and another guy smash into each other and we call it a day. But there's just so much more and you have to do it on the fly. And honestly, while a 300-pound guy is trying to kill you, it always fascinates me how much is going on just a single football play.
I think that's the reason. there's obviously a discrepancy versus a rookie and a vet, right? And I think that that's sort of where the journey is. It's, you know, in your first couple of years, you're a young guy that's relying totally on talent. And when a defensive play is called, you know what you're doing. And as a vet, as a guy who starts getting experience, if you're lucky enough, and starts making plays and sticks around, not only do you know what you're doing, now you know how you fit within this scheme. So now you know where the linebackers are. Now you know what the DBs are doing, right? And then the next level to that is understanding the situation that the other team's in. Well, it's second and 10. This is going to be a pass. If they run the ball, they're stupid. They're punting, right? So they're not going to do that. And in this defense, I actually have a little bit more time to get there because I know my DBs are going to have extra help in the coverage aspect. So I might be able to go to a second or third pass rush move in this situation. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think that that is where the game really opens up is you go from, hey, I know what my responsibility is to, hey, I know what everybody's doing and how I fit into that phase. The old linemen on a team are the first guys to really understand that because the old line has to know everything that's going on. They've got to be on the same page in terms of who the primary read guy is, right? Like things like that. And that's why you always say the old linemen who only know their job, those are the old linemen that aren't going to be around for long. The guys who know what the guy on the left and the right is doing, those are the guys that are going to be long if they're good enough.
And I would think as you get further along in your career and you know more and you talk about knowing what other guys are going to do, if you're then surrounded with guys who know everybody else's job, you in your position can go, hey, I can improvise a little bit on this one and he'll know what to do. And if he improvises, I'll know how to help him do that. And it could really become a real trouble for offenses. If every defensive player was this is a random number, a 7-year veteran, and we're all on the same page, the things I imagine you could do could be just bamboozling.
Yeah, because you've had the benefit of practice too, right? So if I'm running a defensive line game with my defensive end, and I'm the 3-technique tackle, and I know that on the play call, this east call, let's call it, right? The defensive end is going to exchange gaps. So he's going to shoot the B gap and I'm going to go around, I'm going to get contained, right? But in practice, the way I run it with so-and-so, he's really good because what he's going to do, instead of shooting the B gap, he's going to actually knock the guard off of his track. So he's going to come in and he's going to ricochet off the guard and going to get up. So I have to set this guy up a little bit more, right? So the guard's really focused on me. Then he won't see my defensive end coming at all, right? Like those are the things that you start to develop, the understandings and the type of guys you are. Like there's been times I remember we were playing with a guy named Jimmy Verdon, and we had we literally had one defensive line call where two guys lined up over the center. And the defense was only going to work if both those guys attack the midpoint of the helmet of the center. That's the only way it's going to work. But I knew Jimmy wasn't a guy who was going to do that. He had just gotten here, and he was an NFL guy. He was really good, but he wasn't going to take the right step. He wasn't going to, right? And I knew that, so I did my job anyways. But at the same time, when you looked at it on film, the play didn't work out because Jimmy was doing his own thing. He stepped differently. He went after the guard because that's what he was used to, right? Like, so you sort of know things are going to work out or not going to work out, or you know the guys you're working with, and sometimes guys need talking to, right? Like, hey, just remember, man, you know, in this situation, they're probably going to do this, right? Like, so if you need to, you know, line up a little bit wider or come closer to me, right? Or I'll give you a Reno, you know, I'll give you a rabbit or a bird call, right? Run or pass. So we'll figure it out. A lot of communication. That's why I say communication is everything in football.
And it's in the conversation with Cody there, a question came to mind because we mentioned the 4.5-hour workday. If every player made 10 times as much and could spend as much time on the CFL, what would be the next level for them? What would improve if this hypothetical scenario of a minimum $600,000 salary was the case? What would that change?
Technique.
Okay.
Coaching. It would improve the game.
Yeah.
In general. Just because guys would be better technically, fundamentally, they'd be right, and you could spend more time, and again, you could, instead of having maybe one or two scenarios for Ottawa, in second and seven plus. Now, Ottawa, we know that we have five or six scenarios, right, in second and seven plus. So, again, you raise the money, that's one thing, but realistically, it's the time. Like, the money, like, if you turn around and said, okay, guys, from now on, the minimum wage is $100,000, and the top scale is probably, like, $900,000 a year, right? But you kept the 4.5 hour rule, nothing would change. Guys would just get more money, right? It's the time. Right. So as a matter of fact, so for instance, if you were to take down the salary cap, say now the minimum's 35 grand and the maximum's 80 grand, but you extended, right? You extended practice times and you just took that rule out, you'd get a same product or better.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah. Just the commitment. And I mean, you talk a lot about the coaching and how important that would be and that's a real benefit the NFL has with salaries that guys can make a full living on, as opposed to the CFL, where some guys have to make sacrifices, let's say, to their sport. And that's the way it is. So I just got it. Zinger, let's get on this. Whenever the Mega Millions in the States hits like 750, 800 million, let's win that. Let's take that. Let's multiply these salaries out and let's make this go.
I have to find a way to rig the system somehow. Maybe we can get an easy win.
Yeah.
That'll be my weekend plan.
I like it. Luke, great to talk to you again. We'll talk to you a little more on Monday.
Let's do it. Have a great weekend, boys.
All right. See you, Luke Mulliner with us, of course, every Monday and Friday on the Sports Cage. It is 5:51. Final thoughts coming up.
It's 5:54 with the sports ticker. When the NBA returns to play, they will plan to test every player every night. That according to a report in The Athletic. And if a player tests positive for COVID-19, he will quarantine for 7 days. The league and players have agreed on a 22-team plan to resume play this summer in Orlando, Florida. Michael Jordan and the Jordan Brand announced they will donate $100 million over the next decade to organizations that promote racial equality and social justice. Nike has also pledged $40 million. That's 40 million over the next 4 years, DT.
Yeah, each entity, $10 million a year for the next 4 and 10 years. Great to see them diving in. Sports Cage on Fridays brought to you by Nelson Homes, supplying home packages and RTMs for over 65 years. And of course, yes, Cody Fajardo was with us from 5:05. You can always get the Sports Cage on demand for the Canadian Brew House. You can still order your favorite CBH menu items for curbside pickup or delivery with Skip the Dishes. Zinger, as a sports fan, and of course you listen to every game right here live on 620 CKRM, but when you watch Chris Cuthbert, what do you take away from watching Cuthbert do his thing?
Just his versatility, probably. We talked about it earlier in the show, how he can be calling a CFL game one night, and then the next night he's in an NHL barn doing an NHL game. So just his ability to do so many things and do them at such a high level. Not many broadcasters can do multiple sports at a high level that he does. So if there's one thing that I would take away from Cuthbert and the way that he broadcasts games, is just the way that he's just so confident in his role and the way that he can just seamlessly jump from one thing to another and just be totally like the best at it. It's very rare.
It is. And to be that good for that long when that many people want your job, how many people would come to him and say, man, I'd love to have your job?
Yeah. I think you said since 2008, he's been doing the Grey Cups.
TSN got the rights to the Grey Cup
after
in
08. CBC, right? Yeah.
So he's now, he put out 25 Grey Cups. He's done. When you think of Eddie Brown kicking that ball up to himself, that's Cuthbert. Eddie Brown. He'll get, I love it. I love it. Cause a couple times a year his voice will crack because the play was just so good.
Was 96 Grey Cup, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Edmonton and Toronto in the Snow Bowl.
Yeah, that was, I believe that, I feel like that was his first one.
I think it might have been.
25 from there. Yeah, might well be. That's a real loss for TSN, for hockey fans in this country, when you think, oh man, we're going to get two hub cities, and in one is going to be Cuthbert, and in one is going to be Jim Houston, who I hear different things from folks about whether they like Houston or not. I think Houston is fantastic.
Oh, such a voice of hockey. I mean, yeah. You hear that voice, you just automatically think of a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Great save by Bobrovsky.
Cuthbert said, you know, I'm excited to get back to hockey night in Canada. And just as a guy, as a fan, and as a guy who worked with Cuthbert, I hope he gets to do a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Because he's done everything else in this country. So many huge moments. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Sportsnet. That's a big get and an interesting time to get a guy that big, but that's the world. Cuthbert will join us Monday on the Cage. Very excited to talk to CC about this opportunity and what is next for him. Thank you so much for being with us. Hope you enjoyed your first Fajardo Friday.
I did.
We will have him every Friday, and we'll take your questions. You throw me some questions, we'll feed them to Cody as well. You can hit me at SportsCage, at DT on SC as well. Zinger, Luke, and I are back on Monday. Have a fantastic weekend. Take an umbrella if you're in the Regina area, because it's going to be wet. Stick with us. Nevin at Night is next on 620 CKRM.